Reinvest in your wellness goals this spring with savings on supplements. May 14th and 15th only, I'll be offering 10% off all products in my online full script supplement dispensary. May 14th and 15th, 2 days only, get 10% off and free shipping on my entire inventory of top supplements at drhoffmanstore.com. We stock only the highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients and take myself. It's the safest and most convenient way to purchase my curated supplements. Buying through FullScript offers fast, free shipping and optional refill reminders via text or email. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. It's safe, secure, and includes world-class customer service. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for 10% off and free shipping for 2 days only, May 14th and 15th. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Much awaited during the week, I very much look forward to my opportunity to have a colloquy with my good colleague, Leila Mutin, in an effort to address your questions. Your questions come to us via questions at drhoffman.net. Leila, of course, is our nutritionist in residence. We practice together in Manhattan on a daily basis. How are you doing, Leila?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Very well, thank you. So questions at drhoffman.net is the destination for questions, and I'm happy to see that there's a mailbag full of interesting questions. But before we get to questions, I will share with you an article from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Now, I always much await receiving my AM journal, Clin Nutr, which is abbreviated.
Yes.
Yes. The AM journal.
AJCN.
Right. AJCN. Because, you know, I sit and I mull through it, and I always am looking for news you can use from a nutritional standpoint. Sometimes the studies are a little esoteric, a little technical, and, you know, don't really have a lot of practical application. How do you assess the nutritional status of starving children in Zambia? Okay. Well, maybe. Definitely of relevance to doctors who do international medicine provide aid to underdeveloped countries, but, you know, less of a message.
I have an answer. A nutrition-focused physical exam is one thing, certainly.
Yeah, definitely.
It's one thing.
This week, there were a lot of articles, and I'll share some of them on my podcast radio program. This weekend, I just, you know, pull out a lot of articles. By the way, just parenthetically, I have some good news for our Intelligent Medicine listeners. After many years of trying, you can't imagine how long we've tried. We have categories that we like to fill, you know, in terms of health products. So, for example, we have a really excellent garlic product, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. We've got several energy products. We've got the True Niagen. We've got NT-Factor. We have a nitric oxide product, Berkeley Life. And we have an olive oil product, which, olive oil is a real functional food. But I've been looking high and low for a company that I can get behind for cocoa, high-quality cocoa. And we finally have found it. And they're going to be coming on as a sponsor, and I'm test driving their products. They sent me samples, and they're really excellent. And there's some no sugar options, and there are some options that contain a little bit of sweetener, but very low carbohydrate and very high flavanol content. You know, the cocoa terrific. Flavanol is so beneficial for brain and heart, and we're going to be rolling that out, I think, next month. So stay tuned for that.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's exciting news. But coming back to the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, I have an article here in front of me. Bear with me because the title's a little technical. Matched whole grain wheat and refined wheat milled products do not differ in glycemic response or gastric emptying in a randomized crossover trial. So the background on this is that, you know, we often hear eat whole grains, eat whole wheat products. And
yes,
the big food has been very quick to accommodate us so that we can now get whole grain Cocoa Puffs, you know, whole grain, you know. Whole grain Cheerios, you know, made with whole grains,
yes.
You know, all these things. And, you know, you, with your background in at the Atkins Center, when
yes.
you work with the late Dr. Robert Atkins, you recognize that this is a hype, that the idea that putting a little bit of whole grain content into a cereal does not make it wholesome. And then, some people say, well, I had a whole grain bagel for breakfast. That's a healthy choice, as opposed to a white bagel. You know, it's a dark bagel, you know?
Right.
So this is what this speaks to. And I'm going to share with you the introduction, which states it very nicely. Current dietary recommendations call for increased consumption of whole grain foods, stating that over half of one's overall grain intake should come from whole grains. That's the Dietary Guidelines for Americans as of 2020, the new iteration. They say consumption of whole grain compared with refined grain foods is associated with lower glycemic response and decreased risk of type 2 diabetes. That's what they say. So blah, 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 blah. They go on and on. So then they tested out the proposition. And here's what they looked at: cracked wheat, which is bulgur wheat. They looked at semolina. Yeah. They looked at whole grain wheat flour. They looked at refined wheat flour, which is white flour. They looked at reconstituted coarse bran and reconstituted fine bran. And essentially what they found is it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference in terms of what's called the area under the curve, which is the amount that it increases blood sugar. And I'll run down some of the comparisons. Whole wheat flour compared with refined wheat flour. No differences were found for the area under the curve and peak glucose value. So then they compared cracked wheat with whole wheat flour. Now, cracked wheat is bulgur wheat, so you'd think it's not as fine particle size. Well, they say that cracked porridge had a little bit of a lower area under the curve, but it wasn't that dramatically different. So, you know, you can have wheat, don't have flour. You maybe have bulgur wheat. Have tabbouleh. You know what tabbouleh is, right?
Tabbouleh, yes.
Yeah, tabbouleh, Middle Eastern food, you know, made with, what do you make it with? You make it with a little bit of cilantro or something, or parsley.
Oh, well, it's actually parsley.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lemon juice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there's a lot more herb going on there. But anyway.
And then there's the semolina, which is highly touted. You see semolina, you think you're getting some added value. Semolina compared with refined wheat flour. No differences in area under the curve.
Yeah.
So what they conclude here is that the present results show there was minimal to no effect of whole grain wheat on glycemic response or, importantly, appetitive response. So, you know, this whole notion that, it's more filling because it's got more fiber. The problem is even, you know, and I notice this, you know, sometimes I get maybe once a month, I just get a craving for oatmeal. You know, maybe I'm taking a long bike ride. It's just like, it seems like a good idea. And I have
a hearty bowl of oatmeal. Right.
Right. But what I notice is that it doesn't hold me for very long. Within an hour and a half, I'm hungry again, as opposed to, you know, eggs with, natural sausage or something like that. It sticks to your ribs.
Yeah.
Those foods stick to your ribs and have a better, response in terms of appetite suppression later in the day. So anyway, for what it's worth, and by the way, this is something that you've been really good on because, frankly, you know, you see so many. Tell me your experience is a lot of people think it's more virtuous to have whole grains. They're proud of that, right?
Well, for example, I'll quote a recent patient. I'm diabetic, so I eat my steel cut oatmeal for breakfast. I'm like, well, that's not a great idea. But why? But it's whole grain and there's fiber in it. Well, that's not enough. It's still going to have the same impact on your blood sugar and you're going to find yourself hungry you know, an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours later. Mm-hmm. So it's still too many carbohydrates.
Right.
Is really the bottom line.
And it perpetuates elevated insulin, which is the culprit in metabolic syndrome.
Absolutely. And, absolutely.
Yep.
And or a patient will say, well, I'm trying to lose weight, so I'm concentrating on whole grains. Mm-hmm. You're not going to lose any weight eating whole grains.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to lose any weight eating grains, period, or that much.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So, you know, we literally eliminate the one food group, grains, which includes whole grains, refined grains, all of the above, and voila, weight loss continues, blood sugar gets better. It's the food group with the most carbohydrate.
And it's very paleo. Mm-hmm. And not to say that our paleo ancestors did not have carbohydrates. They did, but they had it from roots and berries.
Yes.
And sometimes from honey, if they got lucky. There's one tribe in Africa, which has a very low rate of obesity. But in the bee season, they get a very substantial double-digit percentage of their calories from honey. But they need it because they're on the verge of starvation. You know, that is an essential source of, it's not just an add-on like, oh, I had a big meal, now I'm going to have a dessert, you know.
Right.
It is sustenance for them. So anyway.
Yeah, which is completely different from the American diet. No, we don't need the additional honey. But it's honey. It's natural. Well, it's still sugar.
Yep. Yep.
It's still sugar.
Yep.
So I feel some vindication with the study that you're telling us about from American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. That, you know, grains are grains, period, end of story. The fiber is not the superhero that people think it is, but the fiber will fill you, but the fiber won't impact your blood sugar, but the fiber will help. It's not enough. It doesn't do it the same way that protein and fat achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
Much better response eating an avocado or eating an avocado omelet or something like that.
Right. And, you know, these days when I'm making shakes, I throw like half an avocado in the shake. It really makes it nice and creamy. It's a really nice. I put in some NT factor powder and some colostrum powder and, you know, and just some other, whatever healthy ingredients I have on hand.
You know, this morning for breakfast, I ate guacamole with, you know, a few spoons of guacamole. I followed that with a mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
I was done.
Yeah.
The guacamole was extremely satisfying.
Well, that's great.
Well, and I like to make it with lots of cilantro.
Yeah. Right. You've attuned your body. So maybe skip the, you know, the avocado toast and just have the guacamole. You know,
exactly.
Skip
avocado
the chips.
Toast is such a big deal.
Yep.
It's on regular menus now in restaurants where it never was before. Avocado toast. Eat the avocado.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to questions, shall we? Questions at drhoffman.net. I'll remind you, it's a destination for questions. Thank you for sending questions this week. We always appreciate them. Let's go.
We've got an email from Carrie. Hi, can you comment on spermidine as an anti-aging supplement? I already take NAD. Should I add this one too, or does NAD do the same thing? So I took a look at PubMed for spermidine. And what I found was an abstract from Science from 2018, Spermidine and Health and Disease. So one such agent that they talk about here, spermidine, which is natural polyamine spermidine is what it's called. Apparently in rodent models has some prominent cardioprotective, neuroprotective effects and stimulates anti-cancer immunosurveillance. And moreover, according to this, dietary polyamine spermidine uptake correlates with reduced cardiovascular and cancer-related mortality in human epidemiological studies. What spermidine can do, and that's why it's touted as an anti-aging supplement, is it preserves mitochondrial function, exhibits anti-inflammatory properties, prevents stem cell senescence.
Mm-hmm.
So, and mechanistically, it shares the molecular pathways engaged by other caloric restriction mimetics.
So things like the sirtuin-like compounds, like
exactly
resveratrol and so on.
With autophagy. And I think that's its claim. The spermidine supplement makers are claiming that it can bring on or spur autophagy. Hey, autophagy happens when you've been fasting 12 hours. It peaks at 12 hours. So a minimum fast of 12 hours is the way to go.
Right. And I think we have a question on intermittent fasting that we'll get to a little later.
Right.
So a spermidine, it doesn't sound that appetizing. It's actually named after sperm because there's a high content of spermidine in sperm. But that's not the only source in nature. It's also found in various plant sources. And so it's not uniquely like an animal product. And it is available as a supplement, I guess. And the question is, should you, is it redundant of nicotinamide riboside or NAD? The answer is, I think it probably is complementary, but there's so many things that are complementary. I mean, we just talked to Garth Nicholson about his research on NT factor, which demonstrably helps the mitochondria, but in a different way than true niagen, which is a building block for NAD. And then there's coenzyme Q10, and then there are things like PQQ, and then there are things that help with cellular metabolism like carnitine or ribose. All of these may help with energy support. And then there's, magnesium and various cofactors for the Krebs cycle, the B vitamins, and on it goes. So I don't think there's one unique supplement that, it's like one size fits all.
Exactly. It's not spermidine for autophagy and nothing else.
Right.
That's just wrong.
Right, yeah. Right. So, it's not something that I take. It's something that's definitely on my radar screen, and it may be part of a comprehensive program. We'll keep an eye on it. It's a little bit of a stepsister to other more popular supplements, but it's definitely got potential, right?
Something to watch.
Yeah.
Something to watch. Carrie, thank you for that thoughtful question, and we will keep an eye on it. We will keep an eye on it. So,
do you want to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with our listeners? Should we do it now? Let's do it. All right, here it goes. In my 40-year history of broadcasting, I have never endorsed a weight loss product because most don't deliver until now. Science behind CaliCurb is so compelling that I can support it as a plausible alternative for curbing appetite and enhancing satiety to help you shed pounds. The active ingredient in CaliCurb, Amerisate, comes from a specific New Zealand-grown hops flower, which works by activating your body's own appetite-regulating chemical messengers, including GLP-1, which signals specific areas of the brain to effectively manage hunger in just 1 hour. CaliCurb is clinically proven to reduce hunger by 30%, cravings by 40%, and calorie intake by an average of 18%. CaliCurb is a safe, effective, and affordable natural appetite-suppressing supplement made in the United States with no chemicals, synthetics, or caffeine, and it doesn't cause jitters. Take control of your eating habits and cravings naturally with CaliCurb. For more information and order, just go to CaliCurb.com. That's CaliCurb.com. Use coupon code DH10 for 10% off. That's CaliCurb.com. Coupon code DH10 for CaliCurb. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They are what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource for you. And now back to our questions. What's next, Leland?
Actually, we have a comment here from Michael, who's sent us questions in the past. And the last one was about this Dr. Cooper from Consumer Labs and his take on things. I want to read it to you, Dr. Hoffman.
Sure.
Because he believes that there's a lot of confusion at Consumer Labs. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I subscribe to Dr. Cooper's Consumer Lab reports. When he discusses the uses, side effects, benefits of supplements, he invariably refers to studies that appear to contradict what most integrative medical doctors say about the supplement. For example, while he does agree that vitamin D is beneficial, he notes that its benefits only occur for people who are severely deficient and that it may be dangerous if you're taking more than you should because it may increase risk of fractures. Anyway, Another recent example, he cites a study that says too much vitamin C can actually make COVID worse.
Hmm.
What?
Yeah.
All right. That yeah. I call that negligent.
Yeah.
I call that hurtful.
I don't think that there's credence to the vitamin C story.
No.
Vitamin D is a fat-soluble nutrient. It's got lots and lots of benefits. I think that there are some studies that suggest that in excess, in certain circumstances, it can have deleterious effects, but the threshold for toxicity of vitamin D is very high, and we're not seeing downsides with people even taking astronomical doses for the most part, but we monitor it, and you want to be sure that people know. So, here's a little insight on Consumer Lab. It does a very comprehensive job of reporting on nutrients, and you can get a lot of information from them. But I actually had an opportunity to talk to somebody who's in the supplement industry. He runs a prominent company, and he was describing how it works. And in order to get your products evaluated by Consumer Lab, you have to pay several thousand dollars. Well, the reason they say is because it supports their research and it supports their testing, which is expensive when they want to test supplements to see if the supplements are adulterated or if they have toxins or if they meet the label claim. In other words, if it says that there's 500 milligrams of something and it really is only like 180. So what he said, and I said, okay, so it's pay to play. And he says, yes, in a sense, it is pay to play. And, you know, he thought it was in the interest of his company to have his products evaluated by Consumer Labs. And mm-hmm. Not to be confused with Consumer Reports, which is always negative on supplements. Forget them. I take some of the statements of Consumer Labs with a grain of salt. Also, there's an inherent bias when the supplement companies that are tested and rated are supplement companies that want to play. And then there may be others who make very fine supplements who just decide, I don't want to play that game. You know, also, they don't want to expose themselves to the risk that some test will be misinterpreted. And I've seen this, is that some very fine supplement companies get a knock from Consumer Labs because of some infinitesimal content of something like lead or something like that, that is way below the threshold that's established by the FDA. It's meaningless, essentially.
To make an analogy, you would find the same amount of lead in your organic salad.
Yeah.
It's in the soil.
Actually, yeah. a better example is arsenic. Arsenic, which is, arsenic. You know, people go, oh my God, you know, arsenic and old lace, you know, it's like poison.
Yeah.
But arsenic is ubiquitous in the environment. It's not necessarily an industrial contaminant. It's in the soil. And there are certain plants and certain herbs that tend to pull arsenic out of the soil. And it's very hard to have zero arsenic content.
Exactly.
And they might point that out. And
brown rice, sunflowers. Pull that out. I think oranges too.
And incidentally, speaking of sunflowers, there's a crisis in the supplement industry because a lot of people don't like soy in supplements. And soy is a source for vitamin E. And it's a source, especially for lecithin, you know, when making lecithin. And so people say, well, I don't want that soy. What? So the alternative is sunflower. Guess where the majority of sunflower comes from? Where does it come from?
Yeah, sunflower.
It comes from Ukraine. It comes from Ukraine. And there's a huge shortage and supply chain problem on sunflower. It's really hitting the industry. So these non-soy sources of vitamin E and lecithin are going to get strangled.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, another thing about sunflower, it's interesting because people are moving towards that, as you say, especially for a lecithin source rather than soy. They're using sunflower. But sunflower does pull arsenic out of the soil.
Okay.
For example, my husband and I plant sunflowers.
Oh, nice.
At least along the perimeter of our fence. We love that. We love to see the beautiful blooms and so on and so forth. But then we're very careful in our disposal of it. We throw it in the trash. We don't put it back in the compost.
Oh, you don't compost it.
The arsenic that may have been in the soil is now pulled out. We don't want to put it back in.
Interesting. But so what you, in effect, what you're doing is you're using natural regenerative agriculture to pull the toxins out of the soil. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, great.
That's what we're doing.
Right. And by the way, I was in North Carolina this week, and I talked to, I just ran into a farmer down there because they were having an herb fair. And he was like one of these, like a, just a grizzled, you know, older South Carolina veteran farmer. And it is in his pickup truck, there were samples of like a very interesting natural alternative to glyphosate. And what he has demonstrated, and he's very, he's worked with scientists and soil and agronomists and soil experts. And he's demonstrated that it is as effective as Roundup without the downsides. And in fact, it has a positive effect on regenerating the microbiome. One of the knocks on glyphosate is it kills everything and it kills the beneficial bacteria in the soil. This product does not. And it's kind of a niche product, but he's trying to sell farmers, you know, the ones who are more enlightened on the use of this. And he says that ultimately it's going to save them money and it's going to like increase productivity. And it was very interesting. He's like on a real crusade to utilize these natural alternatives. And I'm not going to mention the name That's of the wonderful. Product because it's up to him to do the marketing and getting the approval and all that stuff. Yes. But eventually, you know, we may circle back and put him on the air. I mean, he's an interesting guy. Very committed to natural agriculture. So I also, you know, we had a question about neonicotinoids, which are the sort of the things that are the so-called natural pesticides that kill insects, but now may be responsible for this colony collapse syndrome among bees. Because the bees
and the neurological effects in people.
Right. So he said, I asked him, what do you think of the safety? And he says, well, it's a disaster for the environment, number one. And he says, you're going to see emerging research which shows that it has implications for human health. He says, just wait. It's going to take a while for that information to appear. But these things, which supposedly have no impact whatsoever on mammalian systems like us, turn out to have negatives. And it's certainly, you know, it's a foregone conclusion. They have a negative effect on the environment because they eradicate insects, which are part of the, you know, the pollination process.
Part of our ecosystem. They're part of, the wasps. The bees, they pollinate and everything, but there are other things. You want certain wasps around. There are good wasps and the ones that are stinging and so forth because they manage the ecosystem also in the soil because that's where their nests are. That's where they hibernate winter long. There's all kinds of insects that we need to leave alone.
Yeah. And that's a little amplification on that for that listener who had a question about neonicotinoids, which are considered preferable alternatives to DDT and, you know, some of these banned pesticides. So anyway.
A lot of these small farmers are, because they're doing regenerative agriculture, and as more and more people are building their backyard gardens or their front yard gardens or their window boxes, whatever real estate or soil that they have available, more and more people are learning because this monocrop culture.
Yeah. Very energy intensive because all the fertilizers come from pesticides. And oh, by the way, a lot of them come from Ukraine and Russia, you know, so we're having major price hikes, you know, like fourfold, fivefold in a cost of fertilizer.
We're destroying the ecosystem, the microbiome of the soil, of Earth.
Right. Did you read the Wall Street Journal article on its innovative approaches that will reduce dependency on fertilizer, which involve microbiome products that fix nitrogen from the air and then enable nitrogen to be recycled into the soil. That's sort of the natural process by which legumes have these little nodules in their root system that actually pull nitrogen from the air and then regenerate it into the soil. I mean, these right now we do basically sort of strip mine agriculture. We just strip the nutrients out of the soil and then we go, okay, we can put it back, you know, we'll buy like fertilizer. But that is a major drain on our energy reserves and with...
It's chemotherapy agriculture. It's not
exactly
working.
Exactly.
It's not working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, you know, that we've got to invest in systems to reduce our dependency on, you know, on foreign imports and on oil. because petroleum derivatives are what drive the fertilizer industry. So anyway, enough of that screed. You know, I'm not sure how we got off on that tangent, but here we are. Let's look forward to part two. And in part two, what are we going to take on?
I was diagnosed with MGUST.
Monoclonal gammopathy of unspecified or undetermined source. Is that what MGUST stands for?
Significance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. MGUST, big problem. Let's address it. More common than you think, although you may never have heard of it. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.